Happy hump day, everybody. Thanks for joining us. Second hour of the show. So, Rami, last night about 28,000 fans packed the Oakland Coliseum. And it was a very, very lively crowd, as Simone just talked about during her headline.
That's cool.
Let's listen to some classic play-by-play from last night's game.
Our youngest, who's now 21, Sophia, my wife, told her, you can't have cotton candy, you're allergic to it. And she believed it all the way until she was like 18 years old. Swinging a fair ball inside the third base line, and Siri's going to turn and make his way to second, and he has notions about third. He'll put the brakes on as Seth gets it back in. You heard the crowd go silent and now getting very loud at the Coliseum. Would now stand in from Tampa Bay. Rays trying to open the scoring, and Hogan can't hear with the pitch calm because of the crowd. And now time is called. Things have gotten loud here, and this is certainly a new experience in 2023 at the Coliseum.
That was awesome.
It's loud, man.
And a great time for the pitch calm to go out to give them a little more room to breathe with the sell the team chant.
That was so loud.
That was a very cool moment. That was a very, very cool moment that A's fans provided.
So loud.
After silence for the first batter of the fifth inning, and then they start the sell the team chant.
I don't know how many reverse boycotts have been done in history.
It's the first I've heard of.
We had a listener yesterday get angry at us, I believe, because we said reverse boycott, not understanding that you nor I came up with that.
I didn't name it that.
No. We had nothing to do with calling it a reverse boycott.
We were just telling you what was happening.
Just disseminating the information is what we were doing for you. Here, one part, before we get into all of this, there was one thing last night that did bother me that I thought was unnecessary. I saw that some people were throwing trash. Not great.
Onto the field?
Yeah, they're like throwing trash.
Oh,
yeah.
I didn't see that.
Not great.
Everything.
Yeah. And you're not doing anything to John Fisher with that.
Exactly.
Some poor A's employee has to run out there and grab it.
It's unfair to the staff.
Exactly.
You're making the staff work and pick up your
garbage.
Who
already was overloaded to begin with, because the A's organization, they're not used to people showing up for games. So there were apparently long lines to get in for concessions. They were already understaffed and overloaded, and you're just adding to their problems.
So that part of it, not great. Not necessary. But this was a night for the fans, Rami. Like, I see some people say, oh, well, you know, what's the point of this? And what the point was that the fans had their voices heard last night. Whether it meant anything, because it really didn't in the big picture, whether it meant something or not, didn't really matter. This was the opportunity for close to 28,000 A's fans to voice their frustrations and show the baseball world, we've had enough, we've been treated like crap, it's not because of this market, it's not because of us, we love this team, we would be here if they were winning games.
Mm-hmm.
That was the message last night. And I believe after reading stuff and watching stuff and listening to stuff today, that message was delivered and it was received. Maybe not by John Fisher and company, but it was received by a lot of people in the world of baseball that write about baseball and talk about baseball.
Yeah, it was loud and clear. And Nick, if you were on Twitter at all last night, all the baseball writers, all the baseball accounts, I don't know about you, I love the John Boy Network. I love their coverage of baseball. They were all over this thing. And man, that's it's cool that they took notice, and I applaud A's fans for organizing this thing and putting it together. But I saw this tweet from Jeff Passan, who I have the utmost respect for as far as baseball writers and baseball media go. And he said the announced attendance at the Oakland A's reverse boycott game, 27,759. And the crowd has been absolutely electric, constantly engaged, chanting for John Fisher to sell the team and trying to remind everyone that Oakland losing baseball is a genuinely bad thing for the sport. And I agree with every word that Jeff Passan wrote right there. My question to Jeff Passan and the rest of the baseball world is, why now? Why? I mean, I get that the reverse boycott got some folks' attention, but man, the A's have literally, and Major League Baseball have literally been trying to move that team out of there for what, 20 years? This dispute has been going on, and I haven't heard mum, nothing from the baseball world of people going, hey, are you guys seeing what's going on in Oakland right now? Like, this isn't right, what John Fisher and Rob Manfred and Major League Baseball are doing. This is bad for baseball. This is bad for the sport. If they can do it to Oakland, they can do it to your city too and hold you hostage for a bunch of public money to get a new stadium and put a garbage product out there that you couldn't support no matter how much you loved it. I haven't heard nothing, not a word from the baseball world until it was already too late. Because A's fans threw this reverse boycott. I was legitimately upset with the Jeff Passans and the other people around the baseball world that were putting this on display and going, yeah, go get them, A's fans. And I was going, now you want to show up
and honestly,
help with the fight?
I don't read everything or watch everything or listen to everything, so I'm not going to make a blanket statement on how baseball writers and insiders have handled this. I'm sure there have been some people who have written about this over the past couple of years. I don't think this has been completely ignored, but I get the point of it could have been amplified for sure. Maybe people just didn't buy into this idea of the A's actually moving to Vegas until they saw something get passed in Nevada, and now it's closer to a reality than it's ever been because of what happened yesterday. That vote yesterday in the Nevada State Senate, that meant a decent amount that pushed things forward. And so maybe now as it's getting closer to a reality, more people will react. And of course, that's not the way it should work. You should get ahead of this thing and say it should not even start to happen or begin to happen. But we are where we are. The idea that these ticket proceeds went to charity too.
I see what you're doing, John Fisher.
Such a save face, try to spin this in any positive way that we can to move the hell on as quickly as we can.
Because people, including us, Nick, we're going, it's a cool idea and all, but you're just putting money in John Fisher's pocket.
Right.
And he's going to be sitting up there and in his office and watching this and hearing your sell the team chants and laughing at you. And John Fisher was like, hey, I'm not putting any money in my pockets with
and
this
he's not game. At the game, Robbie. Right. Let me correct you there. He's at
no,
home.
I know. I didn't
doesn't
say at
care
the game.
Enough
I,
to be at the game.
I said in his office. I assumed he doesn't even have an office in the Oakland Coliseum.
It's yeah, too, okay, it's you're
too,
right.
It's too broke down and dilapidated for John Fisher to show up there. This was his way of him sort of washing his hands of it and going, I didn't make any money on this thing.
Absolutely.
No, absolutely not. And we care about the community here
yep.
at the Oakland A's.
Look like a hero.
Yeah.
Look like a hero. Oh, we'll give the money to charity. I'm not greedy.
Oh, wow.
I'm not the guy who's trying to get $380 million put towards a stadium in Vegas so I can turn around and not worry about spending any money and sell this team for as much money as possible when we get to Vegas. That's not me. It's a save face moment. It's obvious what they were doing, PR stuff. And I think A's fans understand that this is not going to make too much of a change. Again, this was more about listen to us, see us, feel us at this game, and understand that you suck and we don't. It's you. It's not us. It's like if you get into a breakup and you go off a little bit on the other person, you know it's not going to change much of anything, but you got it off your chest. It's not me. It's
not me.
You.
It's 100% you.
That's what that was
yeah,
last
was.
Night.
Yeah, it was.
It's not me.
And
it's you.
And maybe, and I, maybe Oakland is the equivalent to baseball of Seattle in the NBA where people see this and they go, oh, man, they are going to lose the A's, but they deserve to have a team. You know what I mean? And now the next 20 years is a fight to instead of trying to keep the team, to get a team like we've seen with Seattle since yeah. the Sonics left. You know what I mean? Because, man, the fan base is there, and it was shameful from the jump for John Fisher or Rob Manfred. Literally in Milwaukee a couple weeks ago, where the owners' meetings were happening, went in front of microphones and blamed A's fans, said they were part of the reason, part of the problem. And like, again, this just goes back to my thing of there are just some folks in this world who have no shame, who will just say or do anything to get what they want, and it's fed by greed, and it's gross, man. It's gross what baseball is doing to Oakland, and I just wish that the national media would have taken some notice of this earlier. I'm not blaming Jeff Passan or anybody else. It's just like this has been going on for a long time.
Well,
man,
don't forget too, we see this with the NFL Network. We saw it with Deshaun Watson and all that stuff going on. NFL Network hardly talked about Deshaun Watson.
Yeah.
In his situation.
It's funny to me how the announcers couldn't actually address what was going on there.
Don't overlook the relationship between leagues and broadcast rights and outlets that carry games. Don't overlook that.
There was one point where Billy Joe Armstrong, lead singer of Green Day, he was there. And they put him up on the jumbotron. They're like, hey, everybody, Billy Joe Armstrong taking in an A's game. And he started chanting, sell the team. And they quickly took him down off the jumbotron.
Beautiful, Billy Joe. Beautiful.
The way it couldn't be acknowledged by the A's in stadium or on TV or on the radio call is just, oh, man. Like, nobody knows what's going on because you don't acknowledge it. Good job.
NBA and analytics reporter Seth Partnow of The Athletic will join us in 90 seconds.
Cattles
and Rami.
Sactown Sports.
All right, let's jump to the Folsom Lake Honda hotline. Folsom Lake Honda, your one-stop Honda shop. And joining us right now from The Athletic, he writes about the NBA and analytics, is Seth Partnow. Seth, thank you for joining us. It's Cattles and Rami, Sactown Sports. We appreciate your time. Let's talk about the news of the day. Lots of Bradley Beal chatter. The trade talk is heating up. When you look at Bradley Beal, especially analytically, statistically, the last couple of years, how much sense would Beal make for a contender to you?
That's a question not just about his ability, but frankly about his contract. And
right.
I think he's certainly a player who at this point in his career, both from a kind of a per minute standpoint when he's actually playing and the fact that he struggled to stay on the court, doesn't really come close to justifying one of the largest salaries in the NBA. Doesn't mean he's not someone you'd be willing to trade for. It's just I don't know how much you should be willing to give up for the opportunity to continue to pay him at that level.
You know, when you hear a Bradley Beal is out there, we've heard Dame Lillard chatter, we've heard Jaylen Brown chatter, and then you start hearing the usual suspects of teams that might be in on these guys. When you look at the salary cap situations of some of these contenders around the league that might want to add a superstar via trade, who's in the best position to do so, would you say?
With the new CBA rules coming into effect, I would almost say none of the above.
Really?
the ability of already high payroll teams to add significant talent, both mechanically and from an owner writing a check standpoint, is going to be pretty significantly reduced coming forward with the I don't know how much you guys have gotten into the CBA, but kind of the second apron amount, which starts to have all kinds of mechanical limitations on how you can add players once your payroll exceeds a certain amount.
Seth Partnow is with us. He's from The Athletic. Seth, again, you're an analytical guy. Have certain teams, you know, we had Jay Triano, assistant coach of the Kings, on the show earlier this year, and I asked him about taking the right threes, and Coach Triano's response was, there's no such thing as a bad three. Have teams like the Kings leaned too heavily on three-point shooting as the league has evolved?
I think the league as a whole has probably hit about the highest level we're going to see. Part of that is recognition that there are some threes that are okay shots, but maybe we can find a better one later in the shot clock. There used to be, you know, a come down first available three, chuck it up. Well, if you're an average shooter taking a semi-contested three in transition, maybe we should turn that one down and find something a little better. As well as defenses have gotten better at limiting and contesting threes, as sort of everyone has realized the importance of doing so. I think 5 years ago, maybe a little bit longer, the statement that there's no such thing as a bad three was closer to right than it is what was wrong. Probably we've gotten past that to the point of needing to be more selective in terms of both who's taking them and, you know, what kinds, you know, off the dribble versus catch and shoot, how open you have to be. There are some guys who are much more effective from the corner than they are from, above the break. So that's a statement that probably was once mostly true and may not be anymore.
So where do those shots go? Is the mid-range coming back? We had Jokic, a big man, winning a title this year. Giannis, a few years ago, did a lot of his work around the basket. Are we going to see the return of the big man? Where do those threes end up going?
I think it may not be that so much as the league has been playing at about as high a pace as it's ever been. And that means we have more early shots than ever. And I kind of think that some of the threes that maybe should go away are those early clock threes that, I don't know, I don't like it when commentators talk about settling for a three, because often a three is a pretty good shot. But sometimes if you take just an okay shot with 16 on the shot clock, we could have done better. And so maybe you play that possession out a little bit longer, and it ends up still being a three-pointer, but it ends up being, you know, an open feet set catch and shoot three instead of an on the move semi-contested one that you could have taken earlier in the possession.
Seth Partnow from The Athletic is with us here on the Folsom Lake Honda Hotline. Cattles and Rami, Sacktown Sports on this Wednesday. Seth, one question I have had, and I'm glad we have you on today, because I haven't found anyone who could give me a good answer, and I think you could be the guy. We keep watching these two-for-one strategies play out. And just from the eye test, a lot of times it seems like the first shot of the two for the one in that is a bad shot. Is there statistical data that backs up the two-for-one strategy, or are teams just taking two bad shots in the name of getting two shots instead of one?
The two bad shots could still be better than the one shot in between, but the math is a lot closer than two-for-one implies. It's really closer to like 1.5 to one. Obviously, it depends much more on if you have the guys who can reliably get that first shot off in the right time window. If you've got Kyle Lowry is someone who throughout his career has been very good at that. You mentioned Dame Lillard earlier, Steph Curry, players like that who can get to a reasonable pull up basically at the right time in the quarter are the players you should work with. The difference between if you correctly got a 2-for-1 at the right time every single time and you never tried to is maybe about a win every two seasons. It's not nothing, but it's not a massive effect. I think probably it's something that more is made of than needs to be.
What do you think is the greatest need or void for this Kings team, and who do you see out there as realistic options on the market to fill that void?
I think that's certainly more paint presence on defense. Who that is a tough one. Because one of the challenges of building around Domas Sabonis is finding the right person who can both allow him to effectively play defense but also protect the paint, certainly as a shot blocker or rim protector. I mean, we kind of tried a version of that in Indy with Miles Turner, and it didn't always work great, so I'm not really sure who that is. But that's the player the single player they probably most need. And then just like everybody else, they need, you know, more big wings who can defend and shoot.
Last one for you from me, Seth. Keegan Murray, a lot of noise about Keegan here in Sacramento this past season. What do you think his ceiling is as an NBA player? And did that ceiling change for you throughout this past season at all?
He had a very impressive rookie year to me. In terms of what his ceiling is, I'm not entirely certain. Part of that is the Kings being as surprisingly good as they were last year allowed him to slot into a sort of a defined role that fit what he was ready to do. And that's not something that really happens a lot for rookies picked that high. They're usually going to worse teams and being asked to do a lot more. So it's a little bit unclear because we don't know a lot about what he would look like if he becomes more of a primary offensive creator. I know that was certainly the role he played in college, but that's kind of the role that most draft picks play in college, and how well that's going to translate in the NBA. I don't think we know yet. I think this year the Kings would be wise to give him some of those opportunities and kind of see if he has the juice to develop in that area. That's something that, a very different player, but an interesting part about Mikal Bridges in Brooklyn was seeing that he actually had a little bit more of that ability than he was able to show in Phoenix. And that, makes him a completely different player. And letting Murray possibly grow into that, or seeing if he can, is, I think, an important thing for the Kings over the next couple of years.
Great stuff, Seth. Fantastic. Have a good weekend, my man, and let's do this again soon. We appreciate you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me. Appreciate you.
All right, there goes Seth Partnow from The Athletic. Again, he's an NBA writer, also dives into the analytics. He was on the Folsom Lake Honda hotline. Folsom Lake Honda.
Your one-stop Honda shop.
See, here's the thing with that. You have been inconsistent, as well as Simone being inconsistent. I don't mind you jumping over me and doing it.
That was good.
The
that
both
time.
Of you, right?
I nailed it that time.
Don't mind it.
Right?
But I feel like we have to come to an agreement here. It's either going to be every time or it's not going
to
happen.
It's a hard thing to coordinate. It's a spur of the moment thing.
Yeah?
Yes. It's not going to be a home run every time. I'm sorry.
Well, that's for certain.
We step up to the plate and
we
take
could,
swings.
What we could do is we could record it. We could pull that perfect.
No. I feel like that takes away from it.
Yeah.
The magic, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like the live magic of it
okay.
is what makes it special.
I
so I should
once.
Just be ready
I
for you guys to yell at me at any moment during that read,
yeah.
is what you're telling me.
Mm-mm.
At any moment, you guys could just scream at me.
It's more
and totally knock me off my feet.
Is it screaming or is it more like a symphony?
Yeah, I just
symphony?
I just sang that at you is what I did.
Oh, is that what yes. that was?
Orchestral, if you will. If we nail it.
Orchestral.
You want to practice?
No.
Okay.
No.
I was so ready. I went right back to the mic.
Always ready. One would argue she was too ready the last time she attempted.
Overzealous was my word.
She's a little too ready. All right. It sounds like a young NBA star could be on the trading block. Find out who next. Could there be a big name in the NBA on the trading block? We talked about Bradley Beal earlier. There's another name that's surfacing.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start with the New Orleans Pelicans, Rami, and their situation. Obviously, they have Brandon Ingram with C.J. McCollum. They have Zion Williamson. They were hoping, I would believe, that that was going to be their big three, or at least the semblance of a big three. And it really hasn't worked out the way that they've wanted it to work out, mostly because of Zion. So are the Pelicans looking to make a little bit of a move here? Are they looking to make a big swing? You talked about big swings mm-hmm. last segment.
Mm-hmm.
Is New Orleans trying to take a big swing this offseason? Here's Shams Charania on what he's heard.
I'm Shams Charania with breaking news powered by AT&T 5G. The Pelicans are expected to aggressively pursue a top pick, potentially two or three, in this upcoming NBA draft with their eyes set on Scoot Henderson, sources tell me. Henderson and Alabama's Brandon Miller are vying to potentially go number two to the Charlotte Hornets in the draft. Henderson worked out on Sunday in Charlotte, and Miller goes on Tuesday. Expect the Hornets to further solidify their draft board as this week closes, but the Pelicans are among teams seriously pursuing that number two overall pick.
Now, Rafael Barlow, who we had on the show last week, he actually talked about this today, the idea of the Pelicans trying to make a move and how would that all play out. And Barlow said that the Rockets at four are potentially interested in moving that pick for a win now player or players. And Barlow said that in his conversations that he's had, Zion's name has come up. Mark Stein also mentioned in his Substack Zion as a possible target, possible guy that could be moved from New Orleans. Now, I'm not going to get into too much detail here because I'll probably get in trouble.
Oh, come on. Why not?
Because I don't want to get in trouble. But there are some off-court allegations involving adult film stars in Zion Williamson. You can Google it if you'd like. A lot of stuff floating around about Zion right now. So, Rami, I ask you, if you're Houston, if you are Charlotte, if you're any of these teams in the top four or five, and you're looking to trade that top five pick because you want to bring in a young star to either build around or supplement your other top players, would you take the risk on Zion Williamson?
No, I don't think I can, man. It was already
getting choked up about this.
Huh? It was already a huge risk before all this off the court stuff has popped up this offseason when it comes to Zion Williamson and his personal life away from the game of basketball. Just on his conditioning, on his injury history, he already had a lot of question marks hanging over him for a guy who makes what he makes.
Yeah.
You throw in this drama and a guy who, hey man, God bless him. I don't think by all indications he hasn't done anything illegal or physically harmed anyone. He's enjoying his life to the fullest, it appears.
You could say that.
And I'm not here to judge anybody for that.
Loving them buffets.
But at the same time, if I'm a business and I'm looking for people to come in and help me win games and make money, I don't know that I'm putting all those eggs in the Zion Williamson basket right now.
I'm far out on him.
Right?
And I loved Zion coming out of Duke. I had such high hopes for him. I believed that he could be one of those very unique players, borderline game-changing with his ability and his size. But I am so far out at this point with him. He has not proven to be healthy, just on the floor due to injury. You mentioned it, Rami. This is somebody who has not been able to stay in shape. The guy apparently just loves to eat. And maybe moving out of New Orleans.
You know what I mean?
Some more than others. And maybe moving out of New Orleans would be a great thing for Zion because they got great food in New Orleans. And maybe if he goes somewhere where the cuisine isn't so awesome, possibly he might eat a little bit less. But with his health.
We're talking about food, right?
Yes.
Okay.
With his health. Over here. With the health and the style of play. Especially. I mean, his style of play is banking on his athleticism and his explosiveness. And the more injuries pile up, the less effective he's going to be. He's not going to age well. He was never going to age well, even if he stayed healthy in his early career. Now, I feel like there's no way he's going to age well. And as you said about, he hasn't done anything against the law and all of that we know. 100% accurate. But what I would say is if I'm a team, I'm very concerned about his lack of discipline. Because it's rather obvious that he lacks discipline and some sort of responsibility to himself. And if he can't treat himself right, how can I get into the business of him if I'm a team when he has not one, not two, not three, not four, but 5 years on his extension.
I was wondering what you were counting there for a second with these rumors. He's
starting now. The rumor today stopped at three.
Okay.
So $33 million is where this extension begins.
Oof.
And it ends at $44 million.
Oof.
You're going to pay this guy hundreds of millions of dollars? If you have a top five pick, here's my suggestion. Just use the top five pick on a young player and hope that you hit
exactly.
on him.
Exactly.
Like, why am I trading the possibility of drafting Miller or Scoot Henderson to bring in a Zion Williamson?
Yeah, I'll take Scoot.
Financially and basketball-wise.
I feel like Scoot's a safer bet.
There's no way I would come close to Zion.
He hasn't shown a lot of restraint. You know what I mean?
Like, I would not touch him, which apparently is not a problem in other areas for Zion in New Orleans.
Seems like what Zion wants, Zion goes and gets. Shrimp juice everywhere.
Did you hear Simone?
Oh, I accidentally turned off the mic. Oh.
I don't know if somebody stabbed her. I don't know what that was.
No, we're having a good time back
here. I can see you having a good time. But the audio version of it, I'm trying to figure out. And I'll stop there. All right, let's. There's no better time to jump to Pat Sajak, right? We're going to honor Pat Sajak with this week's draft mockery coming up.
We're in the room and we're checking boards. Do you think we're being serious? Nah.
It's the mockery draft.
All right, so if you haven't heard, Pat Sajak tweeted out that he's calling it a career after this next season of Wheel of Fortune. It's his 41st season as the host of Wheel of Fortune.
Mic check.
Mic check.
Damn.
And so that got us talking. My draft mockery this week. It's a rather easy one to come up with.
Yes. This one wrote itself.
Best game show hosts. In honor of Pat Sajak.
I always wanted to be a game show host or a game show announcer.
You could do that, I think.
Like Rod Roddy? Like, come on down! That guy?
No. I was thinking you More as host? Like the host. Yeah.
It's just such a cush job being the announcer guy. You know what I mean?
The voice, you got to have a very distinct voice to do that.
I could come up with one.
Yeah, but I don't think those guys are faking their voices.
Oh, yeah. Rod Roddy didn't talk like that.
All right, there's
a around going, come on down!
There's a difference between like over-pronunciating and adding volume versus character acting. I don't think Rod Rowdy's character.
Either one I'd be good with. Host, voiceover guy, whatever. I'm in, if anybody's looking. At Romney's tweeting, sliding those DMs.
All right, so favorite talk show hosts, not talk show hosts, favorite game show hosts. And let's go through the order here. We got Simone starting, then we got JJ, then we have Rami, and then we've got yours truly picking up the rear.
Yes, sir.
Let's start with Simone Rickford, ladies and gentlemen. Simone
yes.
Rickford.
Come on down. With the number one draft pick, I will be taking who is Alex Trebek, please?
Nice.
Yeah. Trebek's got to Canada. Be.
Yeah.
Right off the board.
Trebek's got to be top two or three.
Yeah, he's, for me, the clear cut number one. I assume Trebek would be off the board by the time it came around, for sure.
Unless you had the first pick.
Sure, yes. No, but once I saw the order, I was like, oh, I have no shot at Trebek.
So Alex Trebek, rest in peace, of course.
Absolutely.
Incredible Jeopardy host. So Alex Trebek goes number one to Simone. JJ.
Yes, sir. I'm going with the man with the skinny mic.
Oh. Damn it.
Bobby Barker.
There he is.
Oh. Bob Barker.
Right
Price is
yeah.
right.
You know, this is one of those topics that if you get stuck with the fourth pick.
Yeah. This is like the 0-3 draft. Don't take Darko. Don't take Darko here.
And everyone can see on YouTube, full transparency. I did the whole wheel of names right there for everyone to see, so you can always enjoy that. Mm. So there is no collusion. That was fair and honest.
Transparency is what we believe.
We're freezing envelopes back here.
At the Cattles and Rami show. around to me, and with the third pick, I got to take the man who just announced his retirement. I mean, to me, that's, in my lifetime, that's the holy trinity of game show hosts right there is Trebek, Barker, and Pat Sajak. So I'm going Pat Sajak, number three.
All right, so Pat Sajak. I'm going to go old school on you a little bit.
How old are we going?
Okay.
Now, this is like when I was growing up, my mom would watch some game shows, some reruns and stuff.
All right.
I'm going to hit you with Chuck Woolery first.
Oh,
the Love Connection.
That's why he was coming around. Love Connection, baby.
My guy, Chuck. So Chuck Woolery. Love Connection. Chuck Woolery will be my first pick.
All right.
And then I've got to go with a classic. You want to talk about classic? This guy is a legend in many different ways. You got to go with Dick Clark in the $10,000 pyramid.
That's a good one.
Dick Clark, classic. This guy was impeccable.
Wow.
Dressed impeccably. Hair was impeccable. Pronunciation perfect. Great energy.
It's solid.
People always get wrapped up like American Bandstand. My man was crushing the pyramid back in the day.
Yeah, he was.
He was.
So I'm going.
Before my time, but he looks talented.
I'm going with Tricky Dicky Clark.
There you go.
Good pick.
Back around to me, right? Underrated. And you know what? Kind of a shooting star in the game show world.
He had
a long career in show business.
Dare you say a shooting star?
Yes, I dare say.
I might know where you're going. One or two people.
It was Regis Philbin, man.
Yeah.
Greatest Philemon.
He was slotted.
Who wants to be a millionaire?
He was slotted right underneath Tricky Dicky for me.
Here and then gone. You know what I mean? And then they just went through Meredith Vieira and Michael Strahan.
He was excellent.
He was so good. So good.
Who wants to be a millionaire?
Is that your final answer?
Yes. God damn it.
You ready for this?
Good job.
I'm out of control. Yeah, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? He really put it on the map.
Yeah, he did.
I don't think Who Wants to Be a Millionaire would have been as big of a hit without Regis.
Oh, no. No way.
That man carried that show.
He made it. Give me Regis Philbin.
He always wanted to try to get the people to use their lifelines, you know? Always trying to use.
Are you very sure that's what you want to go with?
Yes,
you know,
exactly.
He'd always make you, you know what I mean? Oh, he's so good.
A little bit of doubt.
So good.
You don't want to call a friend. You don't want to phone a friend.
All right, Jay, I believe.
Yeah, back to you, Jay.
Yes, sir. I'm going with someone who was a little bit before my time, but I got to catch him on the Newlywed Game as a kid. As a young child, I used to watch Newlywed Game. I have no idea why I watched that, but I guess it was prepping me for me to be married. I'm going with Bob Eubanks.
Bobby Eubanks, baby.
My boy be Bobby
solid
B.
Pick.
Bobby
U. That's a solid pick.
Loved Bob Eubanks. You want to talk about skinny microphones?
Yes.
The skinniest?
So Bob Eubanks is a classic.
Off the board. Off
he
the
was,
board.
He was. So I would say, hold on, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of my top 8 are off the board.
Oh, wow. That's too damn bad.
Wow.
Yeah.
Draft board drying up quick for Kettles.
It's a rough one.
Yeah, it is.
We go to Simone.
Yes.
Back to back.
Back to back.
Please. I'm going to go ahead and take a living legend, Steve Harvey, please, with Family Feud. Hilarious
so
stuff
good.
Coming out of that mustache, man.
My dad loves Steve Harvey on the Family Feud. Cannot get enough of Steve Harvey.
He's very good.
Love that guy.
I mean, well-dressed man. If you want to talk about well-dressed man.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Well-dressed man.
Good-looking family. Mm. My second pick here. I'm going to be... Wow, this is such a wild one. And I'm, like, nervous to say it. I'm going to say Joe Rogan with Fear Factor. And I know that's a little out there, but it's my take.
I think he was good. He wasn't on my board, but
I didn't have him on my board.
He was good. He was
can't stand him nowadays. But
I wouldn't say
wow.
I wouldn't say anything great. I wouldn't say he was great.
The thing about his game show hosting style stood out to me.
Well, you just hate Joe Rogan. So.
No, I don't. I don't. Mm-hmm. I really don't.
I don't know. Last time I brought him up, you got pretty testy.
Fear Factor was iconic. Fear Factor was iconic.
Strong
I have
dislike.
To.
I don't know if I'd even go that far.
Right.
I like some of the things Joe Rogan
Let's go to JJ. He's got his next pick.
Yeah, I'm going, again, I'm sticking in my childhood, and I'm going towards Nickelodeon.
Oh, man.
And I'm going with the man himself, Mark Summers, baby.
Oh.
Going with Mark Summers, baby.
Damn, double dare. JJ.
Double dare.
That's a good one. How did I not think of double dare?
My top 8 off the board now.
Uh-oh.
Man.
That was like Mark Summers.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 Yep, my top 8 off the board.
We're good.
Damn.
We're good.
Damn it.
I love Double Dare growing up.
I did too, man.
How did I not?
I thought I was going to be a. And by the way, can we just say, I interviewed Mark Summers on Radio Row.
Wow.
Really?
But.
Look at you.
He.
Big time stuff right there.
He also helped create Restaurant Impossible, which is one of my favorite shows with Chef Irvine.
Gotcha. He is a. Like a bona fide
producer
meat freak,
and stuff,
right? Like
he is. He's OCD, like
OCD, right?
Yeah, you're right. He is one of like a lot of those shows on Food Network. You'll see Mark Summers' name just pop up in the credits as a executive producer or whatever the case might be.
Yeah,
he has a little empire going.
He does.
I don't know much about this guy, other than he was a legend in the game show game, and that's Richard Dawson, before my time.
I know that, but I didn't pick him. Like, because he's like, you know.
He's like picking Jack Sigma.
Yeah, Richard Dawson.
I mean, at this point, you know, you don't know.
He was 1 year in Family Feud, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think so.
He won an Emmy.
Yes.
Won like a daytime Emmy for his only year as the host.
Sharp-dressed man.
Yes.
The turtleneck and sport coat.
Also.
Back in the day.
Hold on. Damn it. I was just going to. Oh, I know what it is. Also starred in The Running Man.
Oh, that's right. He sure did.
Yeah, he sure did. I like that movie.
Oh, my goodness.
He was the host of the show that they were on.
A host he was. That they were like, we need a host. Who do we put in this?
Wasn't Richard Dawson the one that always kissed the people?
Yes.
Like he always kissed the woman?
Yes. Oh, my God.
That boy was laying. He was smooching, wasn't he?
Come here.
Better not smooch my mama.
Get canceled today.
Just sliding in.
And rightly
no
so.
Doubt.
If you get sliding into DMs, Dawson was just sliding in for those kisses. Your lips. Your lips are my lips.
No.
All right. I got the last pick here. I'm going to go with a guy who is not necessarily a great game show host.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
But I love the game, so I got to go with it.
Okay.
Do you know David Ruprecht?
No.
David Ruprecht.
No.
Now, what's the game?
He was the host of Supermarket Sweep.
Oh, yeah.
What?
I love Supermarket Sweep.
Dude, when I was at the Airbnb WrestleMania weekend, the only channel that was on was this one channel. We had it on for whatever reason. And I tell you, Supermarket Sweep was on it every single time we put the TV on.
That's still on TV?
What the hell is Supermarket Sweep?
What?
Oh, my God.
You don't know who Supermarket Sweep
okay,
is?
I'll leave.
Get out,
I'll leave.
Simone!
Okay.
Get out!
Didn't they try to rehash it lately?
Yes.
Like
Leslie
they did
Jones.
Try to bring it back. Okay.
Leslie Jones.
That's right. Leslie Jones was there.
Guys, grocery games, right?
They've redone all these. Like, what's her name? Elizabeth Banks? Is that who it is?
Oh,
she does Pressure Luck,
yeah,
I guess?
Yeah, yeah, she
oh,
does.
There's a,
I didn't
even
know
this. Okay.
Yeah, I didn't know either that there's a new Pressure Luck.
Oh, love Supermarket Sweep, Nick.
Never Dude. Got into it.
Oh, awesome. Come on, man.
Do love guys' grocery games.
So corny. They always used to, like, rhyme. They're, like, clues and stuff.
How about being that play-by-play guy there, Rami? Supermarket Sweep. And Tiffany comes down aisle 6 looking for the Clorox.
Lots of big hair on that show. Tremendously big hair on Supermarket Sweep. Love that show.
Me too. I'm with you.
So there you go. There's our list. Best game show host.
Honorable
fun.
Mention, Howie Mandel.
I can't like believe that you don't know what Supermarket Sweep is.
I know. I have no idea what
it's
it even
could
be.
A fireable offense.
I don't even know what it could be.
Fireable
Multiple
offense.
Contestants, I assume.
Homework.
Going through.
Homework assignment tonight.
Okay.
You got to find an episode of Supermarket Sweep.
How do you think I can find that?
YouTube.
Yeah, you can find it on YouTube.
Come on now.
I meant
now.
Like a streaming service.
It's a borderline iconic show for a certain period of time.
All right. All yeah. right.
Have you ever, you've ever watched Guy's Grocery Game, Simone?
Yes.
You know the game at the end that they play where they have to run around and find certain items?
Got
for,
it. That's super, why I said yeah. it. I thought that's it might sound
sweep.
Like that.
Completely
yeah, yeah, yeah.
ripped off from Supermarket Sweep.
What's the name of this
Guy
show?
Fieri.
Guy's Grocery Games?
Yeah.
Oh, so
okay.
it's a cooking competition, but mm-hmm. at
why
the end.
That, by the way, why does Fieri have to have alliteration all the time?
Because it works.
Guy's Grocery Games. He's got
diners,
the
drive-ins
diners,
and
drive-ins,
dives.
And dives.
Yeah,
what are we doing?
Because it works.
Someone told me my headlines sound like that. I use a lot of alliteration.
His best show is Tournament of Champions.
Oh, I love Tournament.
That's not alliteration.
Oh, my God. Mm. TLC.
All right. Who could threaten the Niners and Eagles in the NFC? And at what level is that threat? It's coming up next.
Cattles.
And Rami.
Sactown Sport.